Hello, everybody, and welcome to probably the most exciting episode of the Michael and Patty Show. It's episode 100.
Unbelievable that we've made it to 100 episodes. I didn't think you had that much to talk about.
Oh, we've got lots. We've got enough for at least 1,000 other episodes, and we have nothing but entertaining questions and statements that are made to us every day in this industry. If anything, it certainly isn't a boring business to be in, and I'm glad we are able to share these experiences with the listeners. So it's great to be at episode 100, season one. So what we're going to talk about today, we have the stats, we have some questions from our Facebook group, and then we're going to answer some questions about the podcast, and if we still have any time, we have some additional stuff to cover. So lots to cover, but we're going to do it in the usual allotment of time. Isn't that exciting?
Yeah, lots of stuff apparently coming this episode.
So if you're new to the Michael and Patty podcast, we are real estate agents in Prince Edward Island that offer over 4 decades of experience, thousands of transactions handled, and many hundreds of chaotic situations under our belt, which we attempt to share with you as transparently as possible. And of course, we cover the PEI real estate market. What we do is we put the real in PEI real estate.
Nice, Michael.
Let's start with the stats. I looked at these stats and I said to myself, self, it's about time the statistics reflect what I actually see when I'm driving around. Because all we've heard is a bunch of hype. Oh, everything's great. Listings are up. Sales are up. Everything's wonderful. Yet when I drive around, I see nothing but price reduced signs, new prices, which means they're overpriced to begin with. We've got the agents doing open houses like they're going out of style, which we've discussed before, is just simply a pacifier for the vendors or the owners of the house. Very rarely does it ever sell the house, but it does give you a chance to put your open house signs 20 to 50 miles away from the house with your name on them so you can be out there visible and have a free marketing program.
Well, and the marketing program isn't necessarily, it's a small percentage being about the actual house that they are opening to the public, and more so about the agent looking really active and aggressive in their marketing plan. Not that I'm 100% against them. It is a great tool. And sometimes those buyers who are apprehensive in contacting a real estate professional to work with, it allows them to kind of tiptoe into the process.
Absolutely. Getting into the stats, and then we'll mention our Facebook group if you haven't visited it yet. Home sales are down 7.4% for August 2025. Home sales numbered 199 in 25 compared to 215 in 2024. As we've said before, our numbers are pretty small, so it just takes one or two houses to make a big percentile change.
Yes, absolutely.
New listings are down by 6.2%. I found this interesting because you would think as properties are harder to sell, there'd be more properties listed. But there's 335 new listings added in August, down 6.2% compared to 357 in 24. What do you think happened there?
I'm actually surprised at that because I would have thought it was inverted. I found there was a little less activity, at least my experience, in 2023 and 2024, and I felt it was starting to get a little busy. But I guess as a whole, in general, I don't know if more people are content staying inside their homes. They are still not feeling confident with, you know, what's going on in the world right now. So they want to stay put, perhaps, and that's why they're not selling their property in 2025.
So consumer confidence could be down. I think the biggest problem is you've got people bragging about how much their house is worth, but what do you replace it with? You're going to replace it with somebody else that's bragging about how much their house is worth. So in essence, yeah, you might have gained $200,000 or $300,000 in your house, but you're going to spend $200,000 or $300,000 on the other end buying someone else's house that's gone up.
Yeah, it's all relevant.
Market is finally balanced, which means it's neither in favor of the buyer or the seller. So all you sellers out there that are 50% overpriced thinking some idiot's going to come along and cut a check, the statistics are telling us that you no longer have an advantage.
That I definitely feel, again, which is why we're seeing a lot of price reductions, because they're wondering. I know I've just had a few calls with different seller clients of mine. What are you going to do to sell the property? I had one client say to me, when I said, well, clearly, because we're not getting any showings, your property is priced too high. It doesn't reflect the market today. And he refused to accept that and said, you're expecting me to lose money. What are you going to do different to try to attract buyers to my property?
And how's he losing money?
Well, in his opinion, a price reduction is money out of his pocket.
So I make up a number that my house is worth $20 gazillion and I lower it by $5 gazillion. So now I'm losing $5 gazillion. That logic makes no sense.
Well, that is, again, in this particular individual, and I've come across this many times, Michael, and I'm sure you have.
Don't you kick them to the curb?
Well, in this instance, we have agreed that our relationship has come to an end.
That's a nice way of saying kick them to the curb. Yes, it's just ridiculous to think. And I know this does happen, and this is why I ask the questions. You'll have someone with a house, and they'll put it on for $800,000, hypothetically. The market's on at six. You both agree it's $200,000 overpriced right from day one, but then time sets in. A few months later, they don't have it sold. They need to sell it. Winter's coming, and the market's suggesting they lower it by 100 to 200 grand, and then they look at that like they're losing 1 to 200 grand. Well, they're not losing anything because the number was fictitious. It's made up. It wasn't based on any facts or data. It was just pulled out of the air. You're hoping someone would come along that didn't do any research, that fell in love with the place and wrote a check based on emotion. Or maybe it was the latest Powerball winner, which happens once every 20 years, but it's certainly not a business plan. There was a case in PEI that an expensive house sold, probably for way more than it should have sold for, but it just turns out this young guy inherited his billionaire father's fortune. Doesn't happen every day.
No, and the other thing that I find in a seller's defense, and I have thrown this back at a few, they go to list their property. They are so excited. They're telling family and friends, here's what my realtor has said my property is worth. And then you get all this.
Is that all they said? It's
yes.
Got to be worth a lot more than
yes.
that. And it's not the realtor that's telling them what it's worth. If it's presented properly, it's the market data that's showing you what it's worth.
Correct. But what their interpretation of the conversation is, the realtor told you this price, they're telling you to undersell it. That's because they want to get a quick sale. Do not sell it for that. That is way undervalued. Here's what, you know, so-and-so's place sold for, which if we ended up doing a research, probably didn't sell for the inflated number given. And they've just allowed their neighbors or their friends or their sphere around them to impact their move going forward and not sell the property at the end of the day. If it was such a fire sale and you're a friend and you're trying to save your friend from losing all this money, why don't you buy the property, get the profit yourself, like buy the property, get the profit yourself, and then split it with your friend if there's such a huge profit to be made?
You know what we should do?
What?
We should continue this conversation in our new fancy, super shiny Facebook group.
Okay. And
if you haven't joined it, we're up to almost 700 members in about 1 month. Been about 1 month, hasn't it?
No, it's been 2 months. We're 2 months now. I think actually officially 2 months.
2 months, 700 members. We want to get that number up to about, what, 10,000? And we discuss everything PEI real estate and anything about Prince Edward Island in general.
Yeah, and it's a great, in my opinion, of course, I feel it is great, Michael. If I want to relocate to a community or I'm thinking of, you know, selling my property or considering Prince Edward Island in the future as a future retirement plan or to raise my family, to start preemptively becoming a member or a part of a group such as the moving to Prince Edward Island with Mike, I think it's from Michael and Patty's show is what.
No, it's called Moving to Prince Edward Island, spelt out with Michael and Patty podcast. So look for that specifically. Otherwise, you will bring up other groups.
Yeah. But the more members that are there, the more value it's going to have while you're doing your research. And I find we have a really great group who are offering input based on the questions and that and the content that you know, we set up to put on there. And I think it has high value. So the more people that join, the higher the value it has for people trying to decide whether or not PEI is an option for them.
So if you do have any questions about Prince Edward Island or PEI in general, or even real estate in general, put them in the Facebook group. We'd be happy to answer them on the Facebook group and on the podcast.
And on the podcast. And the other thing is, just so that you know, it's not one of those, we're not interested in people going name the best realtor or doing any self-promotion. If we notice things like that happening, we're not going to be putting properties in people's faces or anything like that. It is not that kind of platform group. And if we see something like that, we'll probably end up either private messaging the individual and asking them to stop, or just deleting it entirely. It is not meant to be for any solicitation other than just pure content and value, helping people make decisions that are right for them.
That's true. There's other Facebook groups they can go to and ask for a real estate agent, get 1,000 replies that day and never be lonely ever again. So that covers the Facebook group. What we're going to do next is get into questions that we've actually received from the Facebook group. Some of them are so in-depth it would probably take about 4 episodes to cover. Thank you, Sandy, for your multiple volumes on septic systems, which we will cover. It's really good information. But I think people may just get a little bored if we're talking about septic systems for 4 hours. There was that one interesting little tidbit he mentioned that was kind of disgusting. Did you want to mention it?
No, you go right ahead.
Let's just say, to keep this clean, that there's a reason why they're processing septic waste now. Whereas before, they used to just dump it on farmers' fields or do whatever they did with it. Today, it's actually processed. And the reason it's processed is because of the things that people were flushing down their toilets were ending up on farmers' fields. Yuck.
Yeah, so to be clear, what goes in your municipal sewer system, that is not what we're talking about. We're talking about individuals who have septic systems on their property who shouldn't be putting anything other than biodegradable toilet paper and human waste. That is all that's supposed to be going in there. No female products, nothing else is supposed to go into
plastics, metals, anything that won't degrade over time. Do not flush down the toilet and do not use a garburator. I was in one house, it was a higher end waterfront house, and they had 3 garburators. And I'm thinking what they're going to do is they're going to end up just loading their septic field up with the product from the garburator, even though it might be biodegradable. There's such a high quantity of it. You know, if you're dicing 2 pounds worth of carrot scraps or whatever, that's ending up on your septic field and it's no longer going to work. So you do have to handle things differently if you're on a septic system opposed to a municipal system.
Interesting, though, that they used to just take the septic refuse and just dispense it over farmers' fields. But
Patty, question from the Facebook group. I saw 2 listings for the same address. There's 2 different prices. Why is this happening? What's this all about?
Well, I don't know how you answered this question, but I'm just going to tell you, sometimes there could be, I know I've personally done it, if a property is one of these questionable properties, whether they could be a cottage and a single family, some people are specifically looking for cottages, but one that they could visit all year round. And so we would bring that on as a cottage and a single family. Now, with regards to the price component of that question, I don't know if there would be, sometimes there's additional land that would be included. That would be the only thing. There's definitely a difference, and you'd have to go into the details or the overview. Maybe one's including the lot next door, maybe one's not. How did you answer that question?
When you're listing a property, you have the ability to put it under certain topics or criteria, major criteria, and that would be residential, which would be houses, land, vacant land, acreage, same thing, commercial, or recreational cottage. So somebody in commercial is not necessarily going to go into residential, and someone looking for a cottage isn't going to be necessarily searching for a house. So what the agents will do, to the benefit of the vendors or the owners of those properties, is they will set up multiple listings in different categories that apply. Most commonly, you'll see waterfront cottages that could be used as a year-round house advertised as a cottage and also put in the residential house category, because the line between house and cottage over the years, just not here, but everywhere, has been blurred. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes, I would agree.
Like, no one's going to build a 6,000 square foot cottage, even though that may be, for those people, a cottage.
Now, the only way that I would say a property could be brought on, if it is a cottage property and cottage based on access and how the government has zoned or approved it, because they're not going to be clearing the snow, it would have to be livable four seasons. There should be some sort of heat source and hopefully insulated. So that would be the only, if it could not be lived in year round, I would not personally list that, because I feel it's a misrepresentation of the product, as a single family. And if I did list it as a single family because it could be lived in year round, it just doesn't have snow removal, I would have to make sure that, or at least snow removal by the province, that that is disclosed in my overview, the property write-up, so that the buyer is aware that they would be responsible for their own snow removal, which is not a difficult thing here on Prince Edward Island to arrange.
What about a waterfront home that's not insulated year-round that was moved there and put on posts? So technically it's not insulated, but it could be re-engineered or renovated to be a year-round home.
I'd still list that as a cottage.
Disclose it.
Well, I would still list it as a cottage with the potential to be a single-family residential home.
So the other thing you'll see is, and I have done this in the past, you'll see someone has a waterfront cottage or home and they've got five or six building lots with it. I know from experience that you're going to get more money by selling those lots off individually than you're going to get as a group. So usually what you'll do is you'll try to sell the cottage off with all the lots. So you've got two listings, the house or the cottage with all the lots. And then you sell the house with one or more lots and whatever is remaining, then you sell the lots individually. So I did this once with a waterfront home that had five lots. We actually ended up selling the home separately from the other lots. So you actually had a multitude of listings pertaining to the same property. And in most cases, you don't want to sell the house before you give an option to the home or the cottage owner to buy the additional land. Most people don't want six lots.
No, absolutely. But it is nice to, which is why you would hold that back preferably, or at least the lot or two, if it's a situation like that, Michael, that are closest to the residential house or the structure that you're looking to sell. Because someone might want to buy the lot adjacent to it as a little bit of a privacy buffer. So I may list a property that's a lot furthest away, one of them, plus the residential property, and kind of make it clear that there's the potential to purchase more. So you're absolutely right. And it is very good advice to tell a seller, if they want to maximize their return, sell them individually. If you are a buyer, you may be able to pick up a deal if you're going to make life simple for the seller and say, hey, we're going to take the house, but we want all the property, and therefore try your best to get at a bit of a discount instead of selling them individually, builder's price.
What I could do as a buyer is buy that house or cottage with the five or six lots and then just resell the lots. But there is a concern that HST may be applicable because you may convert yourself into a developer after a certain number of lots.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I think it used to be three. I don't know what it is today. I'm not an accountant. But if you're selling off an abundance of lots, you've now created, in the eyes of Revenue Canada, a commercial entity, so they can collect their 15% HST. Now, the last question these people had, and these people are from Texas, thank you very much for listening, is they saw a waterfront piece of acreage. They thought, what a ridiculous price. Can you do some research? So I did some research, and it turns out I did a reverse CMA, so I went back to when they bought it, which was 2021. You know what happened in 2021.
Well, 2021 residential property became inflated. 2022 is when land went up.
So they bought this property during COVID when all the insanity was going on. Properties like this were probably selling for 80, 90, 100 tops. They paid 240. That's what I said.
Oh.
And now, 3 years later, less than 3 years later or so, actually put it on the next year for 50 grand more. So then they put it on for 300, and now it's on for 260. So they paid too much. So now they're looking for somebody else to grab the hot potato. Just be careful when you're buying property. If you're coming from another province or state, this whatever, hypothetically, let's just say it's 50 acres on the water for a couple hundred grand may look like a great deal. But if the next property to it sold for 40 or 50, it's probably not a deal. Do your research.
Yeah, and ask your realtor not only to, because they may just say, yeah, that's what it's worth. And not to say most of us would do this, but I mean, a property's worth whatever a buyer's willing to pay for it. But ask them to provide concrete data, send you off comparables that you can look at that supports the current list price before you write the check and purchase it. Because I'm pretty confident, Michael, in your example there, there probably wasn't data to support the inflated price, and it was more of an emotional purchase. And that's really unfortunate that these particular individuals now, they're going to have their money tied up into this property for probably a decade or so before the market even starts to reach the inflated price or value that they purchased it for.
I know a property that they bought, they're people from California, they probably bought it 20 years ago, and it's still on the market trying to get an inflated price for it because they paid too much. You have a question from the Facebook group as well.
Yeah, it's an interesting point. Somebody had asked that they'd never lived on recreational land and they're not sure what that even means. So, you know, are they able to put a house on it? Is there any special, you know, classifications or requirements with regards to building on recreational land on Prince Edward Island? So on PEI, we don't have a zoning that, I mean, we have cottage rec property, and that just means the province is not going to provide waste and off-season waste pickup or snow removal. It's not on a provincial road. And that's really all that cottage slash recreational zoning. What is the word I'm looking for?
Why don't we start over? If a developer develops a piece of acreage and turns it into, say, 20 waterfront lots, typically, that subdivision would be considered under provincial guidelines as a recreational subdivision. So what happens is they're not responsible for school bus service or garbage collection, and definitely not responsible for maintaining the roads and plowing them and all that sort of stuff. But what has happened, and it's happened everywhere in North America, is these cottage subdivisions attract people that want to build year-round waterfront homes. So they will build a year-round waterfront home knowing that they're responsible for their own snow removal, road maintenance. They may have to catch the bus. The kids may have to catch the bus at the end of the road because it's not going to come down to the house. And their garbage collection may or may not exist, so they'll be responsible for that. But it doesn't pertain to zoning per se. There's really no zoning in the rural areas of PEI. They're working on it, but it's not here as of yet.
So it doesn't change the way you live on the property was one of the questions that they had.
It's just more responsibility.
Yeah, absolutely. And they also said, Michael, they wanted to know, does it differ for mortgage applications when it comes time to sell?
Number one rule when you're looking for a mortgage, actually, there's two of them. Number one, deal with a PEI mortgage broker because they understand the market. People in other provinces and states have a tendency to ask questions that really don't pertain to our market, and they get very confused. The other thing is, I always talk to two banks, RBC, BMO. I talk to two credit unions that aren't affiliated. I talk to two mortgage brokers. I'm looking for the easiest route with the least amount of resistance to obtain a mortgage. Whenever you mention something's recreational, absolutely, it is going to get flagged, and you may have to pay a higher percentile because it's higher risk in the eyes of the people lending the money to you. And you may require a larger deposit, you may pay a higher interest rate, which is why a lot of people will pretend that a cottage is a house. But the bankers aren't stupid. They're going to go on the internet, they're going to look at the tax records, they're going to look at the cut sheets, and they're going to determine whether it was year-round or not. You've probably ran into that before when someone tries to misrepresent a recreational property as a year-round residence to get an easier mortgage. And who are the worst people to deal with typically for your mortgage, statistically?
Your bank, the bank that you already do business with.
The bank you already do business with is not your friend in most cases, unless you're a super, super good client. They already have all of your business or most of it. The other banks or lenders are going to work a lot harder to try to get your business, so they will bend the rules to get you that mortgage in some cases.
Yeah, they're going to compete with when they know this is what your financial institution is that currently has all your banking or is taking care of all your banking needs. They know their rates. They are able to have access to all of that. So they're going to compete and try to sweeten the deal just a little bit to try to get you to go with their financial institution. So therefore, then slowly they can start hopefully winning over your business. So you transfer everything over to them.
So they get your credit cards, RRSPs, TFSAs, RESPs, whatever the case may be, lines of credit.
Yeah. So that answers that question.
Is that that's the end of that question? The other question was actually asked twice in the last week. The process, if you want to buy something bigger than 5 acres as a non-resident. And then the second question was, how fearful should I be of IRAC requirements? So IRAC is Island Regulatory Appeals Commission. You can find all the information by typing in irac.pe.ca and going to Lands Protection. Everything's there, including a database where you can actually look up PID numbers, property ID numbers of properties you're thinking of purchasing and seeing the history of them. The bottom line is, as long as you're not in a super hot zone where the vast majority of owners are from not PEI, non-residents, you should be okay as long as you use a lawyer that's experienced in real estate, particularly pertaining to dealing with IRAC applications. Do not do this yourself.
So what IRAC looks for is they like to keep the numbers under 25% of off-island or non-island residents ownership. They will go up to 30%, but once it gets to that number, it becomes flagged. And that just means now you have to go through a little bit tighter of a screening process because the ownership is approximately a third of the residents or the properties owned in that area are owned from people that don't live on PEI. Once you get above that number, a lot of times, if you're not looking to actually contribute to the economy of Prince Edward Island, relocate here or relocate within a certain period of time, whether it's a year or 2 years. And again, this is all, I'm only trying to give you a general idea of what they're looking for. They can give you more detail. They're great to call if you did have some questions directly for them. However, if it is above that 30%, they will be making sure that your application to purchase that land meets their criteria and what they're hoping for that particular area. So I will say, do not lie on your applications. IRAC, if they find out there are hefty fines, you don't have to, because another question with regards to IRAC that I've always received is, do you need a lawyer? I would recommend you do hire a lawyer and a realtor, for that matter, because of the Advertising Act requirement to represent you. The seller will have to have a realtor provide a letter stating what advertising methods, how many people have inquired, and all of that. And the buyer will be responsible to provide a letter, which your lawyer would do as part of your application, stating what is your intentions, use of the land, why are you purchasing it.
This is episode 100, so now we're going to get into some questions generated by my assistant. You've met her.
Yes, your ChatGPT.
Yes. So the first question, Actually, we should start, how did we start this podcast should be the first question. This podcast was started in an absolute whim. One morning on the weekend, Patty and I do go for breakfast on the weekend. One morning I thought, we go for a coffee or what afterwards, why not try doing a podcast? So quickly, I just assembled everything I needed that morning, and we actually recorded the first many dozens of episodes just on an iPhone until bad things happened.
Until we recorded one, and then when you pressed stop, it didn't exist.
The phone froze, and I tried everything to recover it. I didn't follow my number one rule, being a geek techie, which is what?
Redundancy.
So now we have complete redundancy. So after, I think that was at episode 87 or something like that. So after episode 87, we actually put a professional voice recorder in the studio here, which is a Ford F-150, which allows us to be mobile. And that's how these are recorded. And then we process them through AI. They're originally processed through Adobe Podcast. And then once we convert it over to the digital recorder, which is actually a Sound Devices Mix Pre 3 for anyone into audio gear, I started processing them through Aphonic, which is pretty amazing. I was even saying to Patty there, we had one episode where it was hailing out, hitting the top of the vehicle. We had vehicles and construction equipment around us backing up. So I could hear is that beep, beep, beep. It removed all of that. In fact, I wonder if it's going to remove that this time, but it's really incredible what AI can do in processing audio. So that's how the first episode started.
Well, that's the techie version answer to that, I guess, kind of question. But I will say part of it, now, Michael, you like a challenge and you love marketing. So you're YouTube channel, which is very successful here on Prince Edward Island. I think, in my opinion, you were just looking for that next thing. What else can I do? And we do, Michael and I, as much as we sit on our podcast and we share questions and information and we learn from one another as well with episodes and just during our real estate careers, it offered us an opportunity to really share all our years' experience, hopefully with people that see value in it and want to learn.
And podcasts have become the thing within the last few years. Like everybody, you know, I'm watching a news show, I think it was Dateline or something last night, and now they have a podcast. Everybody has a podcast. It's so convenient. It's such a great way to share information. We don't spend any time at all doing any real research at all for this, and I'm sure it shows, but that's all the time we have to allocate to this because we're both super busy. This is just tossed together. It's essentially unedited. So one of the things we've learned is the ability to talk for 35 minutes to an hour without making any major mistakes because we don't really have editing capability or don't want to get into the time it takes to edit that, because if we did, there would be no podcast. Because perfection turns into time, and we don't have a staff of 50 people to produce this. Like some of these TV shows, I mean, they got 200-300 people running around to put that half an hour episode on television.
Yeah, and they do dress rehearsals and all of that.
Right,
and
we do none of that.
We just take people's questions or moments, incidences, experiences, and we have a shared list. We use GQs and we just are able to collaborate on there and put different things that we feel, you know what, this is worthy of being discussed further.
What's the one thing you've learned about yourself in the last, after 100 episodes? This is a question from my assistant, ChatGPT.
What's the one thing I learned? I learned during the podcast, because a few times in the earlier ones, if I allow my thoughts, because you've done this to me quite a few times, if I allow my thoughts to wander or I am hyper-focused on my response to a statement that you've made, Michael, you're already three sentences later and then you ask me one of the questions on the last sentence and here I'm three or four sentences prior to that waiting to respond until you come up for air. And now I look like I'm incompetent or I don't know what I'm talking about. So what our listeners don't know is I have a pen that I keep in my hand that I make little notes, and I wish I started this from the beginning, and I'll put little keywords so that I stay 100% focused on what you're saying and sharing, Michael, so that I am right on the ball and able to answer whatever question you end up sometimes randomly throwing at me. But I can also then go back to my thought, and it allows me to stay on task. What about you?
What about me? What have I learned after 100 episodes?
Yes.
To have a multitude of topics rather than just one topic, because people may or may not be interested in that topic. So that's why we're covering a multitude of topics on each podcast. And I have had people say, well, can you give us a list of what's going to be in the podcast? Again, we don't have a staff of a dozen people to do all this. However, what we're doing now is we're taking the podcast, we're using AI to produce a textual or a text transcript, and then we're using AI to break down that transcript to list the topics, which Patty actually posts in our Facebook group right now. Thank you very much to technology and yourself.
Yes. Yeah. So Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays, until we're caught up, I will be releasing three summaries of the podcast transcripts so that our listeners, if you join the Michael and Patty Show, another reason to join the Moving to Prince Edward Island Facebook group, because you will get a little bit of a snapshot or the highlights of that particular episode to determine whether or not you feel this is where you are at and the content would have value to you.
What's the funniest behind-the-scenes blooper that never made it on the air? And getting back to that episode that we lost, which was 56 minutes long, and it was just an absolute piece of verbal podcast artwork. There was something said in there that shouldn't really have been aired. So Patty thought this was a message from the universe that this episode just deleted itself.
I 100% believe that, because you started discussing things that I wasn't, or opinions, your viewpoint and opinions, which I wasn't comfortable with. And I probably would have rather not been associated or affiliated with you on. So I was very grateful that that episode deleted itself. But behind the scenes, bloopers are funny moments. I would just say what they don't know is you clear your throat a lot, and AI is able to remove that. And it's such a distraction all the time. So I have to sit here and wait until you're finished so that your voice sounds crisp and smooth. Before we can continue, we have had colds doing the podcast over 100
and
episodes.
And have one now.
Well, you do. I do not. And so some of those incidences, we've had people wave at us or stare at us because we are just two people in here randomly looking like we're talking a little bit animated, if you will. And I think they think we're maybe crazy. So that can be a distraction and kind of make you lose your thought process for a moment.
What has been the biggest change in real estate, PEI real estate, which probably covers the North American market, since we started this show? I would say it's converted from a seller's market to a balanced market, and it will soon be a buyer's market.
Well,
I'm guessing.
Okay. My thought was 2023 when we started this, which I believe we started, was it third quarter or fourth quarter 2023? I feel the biggest change is consumer confidence is slowly returning. I found in 2023, which our numbers prove this, plummeted. Everyone was just in a freeze, standstill position because they thought, where do I go from here? There wasn't inventory to pick from. Everything was like picked over. Prices were coming on way too high. There wasn't inventory to do the next move. And all those that felt they needed to move out of necessity or emotional reasons to be close to family as a result of the pandemic had already done their move. So I found 2023, there was like a freeze. There was this kind of quiet calm. And we are slowly getting back to what is a normal market for Prince Edward Island is anyways. That's what I find the change is.
This is an easy question. Who's more likely to go off on a tangent, Michael or Patty?
You.
Obviously you.
No, that was
actually proved it in this episode.
No, that's you. Sometimes you cut me off to go on a tangent, and that's okay.
Well, the challenge we have here is we're trying to compress 4 hours worth of content inside of 30 to 45 minutes at the most. So it might seem like we're cutting each other off sometime, but we're not. We're trying to expediently move through the material as quickly as we can to cover as much as we can. And if anyone has any questions pertaining to a particular subject, we can absolutely do that in detail. It may even be a special edition episode where we cover one topic for an hour. But for the most part, people want as much information as possible in the least amount of time possible, and they don't want a lot of blah, 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 blah. Have you ever listened to one of those podcasts where it's half of just nothing?
Yes. And I'll tell you some of the things that we do too. We do little hand gestures sometimes, you know, back and forth where it's like, you know, the keep it going or move on. Let's get on with it. You're on a rabbit trail. Time to cut that. Let's keep moving. And we both do that.
Right. And there is podcasts I know of that they rattle on for 2 or 3 hours and they're talking about the weather or
what
how
you're
it's
doing
like
now.
Living in Seattle like I'm doing right now. Okay. If you could have any past guest or listener back on episode 100, who would it be? Well, we haven't had any guests. That was our intention to begin with, but we also thought we would do this in a studio, and we have done a number of these episodes in a studio setup, but staring at walls in an office is not as nice as sitting here on the waterfront in Charlottetown looking out at the yacht club in the water.
Yeah, and then we have to find somebody who's willing to get up early enough on a Sunday morning to come to your F-150 studio, podcast studio. And we're gonna do that. That's something that's gonna be coming up.
We're gonna try. It's just not easy. Because the other thing is the people that we want to talk to might live an hour away.
Correct. So those are some of our, just in organizing, trying to set that up, some of our challenges, but that it is on, it's on the list.
And some of them are just boring.
No, they're not boring. What else do we have?
That's it. We're trying to keep this lean, mean, and clean.
Skip. Yeah, because we're at our 43 minutes, so we don't want to not deliver what we promise.
So here's to another 100 episodes of the Michael and Patty Show, and of course, as we mentioned, join the Facebook group, say hello.
I have a question. So episode 101, is that going to be season 2 or are we just continuing?
That's an excellent question. When we set this up, we have to indicate episode and season. So here's what I thought, and you can tell me if this makes sense or the audience can in our Facebook group. We're going to keep it all episode or season 1 because the way they're numbered, it's just easier for people to say, I listened to show 30, 40, 50. I don't want to get into, I listened to season 1, episode 4, season 2, episode 78. It gets too confusing. But if we do ever take a break from the podcast, let's just say we've had enough, so we decide to take 6 months or a year off, then we will introduce season 2. Does that make sense?
Okay, makes sense. Well, thanks for listening to another episode of, and the exciting 100th episode of the Michael and Patty Show, otherwise known as MAPS, Prince Edward Island's podcast that helps guide and navigate you through the buying and selling of Prince Edward Island properties, as well as anything about PEI that we tend to talk about or share with our listeners. We appreciate each and every one of you, and please keep the questions coming.
Make sure you give us some feedback, thumbs up, comments, subscribe on YouTube if you're listening to there, on there. If you're listening to it on another platform, be sure to give us a 5-star rating, some feedback, and follow. Have a great day. Thanks again for listening.
Thanks for listening.